chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthfuls, smart talk about food, wine, and farming. How are you doing this fine October evening? Absolutely gorgeous day today, and I see that Joey is agreeing with me. They got to go outside and play. They loved it. They're in the golden light. Hope you made it to a farmer's market. I was at Oakmont this morning. I was actually giving a talk at the Oakmont Sunday Morning Symposium. I was talking about how we eat now, how we feed ourselves in all different ways here in Sonoma County. And, you know, just even a little 45-minute tour of that always leaves me so grateful that I live here. One of the things I usually start out those talks with is, you know, we eat exactly like everybody else in the country eats, only better. And that's because of the incredibly fertile land and mild climate. So if you didn't get out to a farmer's market this weekend, maybe next weekend. Markets are starting to close. They've actually been closing for a few weeks now. At the peak of the season, and this always every year it changes, I think it's still accurate. At the peak of the season, there are 27 market days a week in Sonoma, just in Sonoma County. And in the off-season, when we have only our year-round markets, there are still 8 market days every week. The Occidental Bohemian Market has one more week. Its final day is October 28th. Next Friday afternoon, the market always starts at 4 and ends at dusk. The newish Forestville Market, which was at the Russian River Vineyards and Cork's Restaurant and is now in downtown Forestville, that's going on for a few more weeks. They've got a crafts fair coming up, I believe. Cloverdale, which is the Tuesday market in Cloverdale, is one of the most popular markets, with especially with vendors. Vendors just love that market afternoon into the evening up there in Cloverdale. Anyway, there's lots. You know, talk about them all the time. I was at my hometown market today. Sebastopol was absolutely gorgeous. It's that overlap season when a lot of farmers still have a lot of tomatoes, and tomatoes are actually really good. But all of the winter vegetables are coming in. Lots of winter squashes, lots of sturdy greens, still plenty of peppers and chiles. Lots of chiles from say Triple T Farms, lots of poblanos if you're going to be making pozole for Halloween. That's my Halloween tradition. And I should tell you that I have my new web project, MichelleAnnaJordan.com. And on Tuesday, I will be posting a Tuesday feed. I try to do a feature every Tuesday. And a feature involves several different pieces. This Tuesday, it will be going back into my archives from Seasonal Pantry and pulling out all of my different pozole recipes. It is a great way to entertain on Halloween. Anytime, really, but it's for several reasons that's become a Halloween tradition for me. Tonight, we're going to do something very different, though. We are going to go, sort of, to Japan by way of Sebastopol and a sister city relationship. We have with us Meg Mitsutani. I say that right?
Yes.
Excellent. And is it... could you pronounce the city, please?
Yes.
Tokyo. Oh, I was right. Okay. Tokyo, a Japanese sister city. And then we also have Abigail Evans, and you are the chair of...
The Sebastopol World Friends.
Okay, great. And I know there's an event coming up, and it's celebrating both the Japanese, Takeo, and also our sister city in the Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right, Chihiren.
Chihiren. Okay, great. So you've got an event coming up, and it's taking place at the Inmanji Temple. Why don't you tell us about that?
This is our event where we invite the community to come and celebrate with us all of the sister city activities that take place throughout the year. We have an event where we share foods and entertainment from our sister city cultures, which means some pretty interesting cultural combinations mm-hmm. between sushi and borscht. And instrumentation like shakuhachi and bandura. So that really spans sort of a gamut of cultural excitement. And we just invite people to come and learn about our sister city programs and experience the excitement that people feel when they engage in cultural exchange.
Mm-hmm. And it's taking place on November 5th. That's a Saturday. The doors open at 6. The program starts at 6:30. It's at Inmanji Memorial Hall, the location of the great teriyaki Sunday.
Yes, that's correct.
Typically the second Sunday in July, I think. I and my hula sisters almost always go. It's $15 for adults, suggested donation $5 for children and seniors. That doesn't include dinner, does it?
Indeed it does.
It does, wow, mm-hmm. Okay. And then one of the things I want to do, because I've been involved in a sister city relationship or sister region relationship, and it didn't come under the umbrella of the the World Friends, and I know that that's an organization that I should know more about. Why don't mm-hmm. you tell us about it?
The Sebastopol World Friends is the sister city commission that the city of Sebastopol formed in 1985 when they first formed a sister city relationship with, it was at that time, Yamauchi, Japan. And so the World Friends is the all-volunteer organization that runs sister city programs. And what that has meant has really changed over time.
Okay. And how does a location, say like Sebastopol, select a city for sisterhood?
Well, it all happened with a couple of individuals who traveled from Japan, ended up in Sebastopol through friends, and they fell in love with Sebastopol, wanted to create a brand new sister city relationship. Mm-hmm. And both cities got on board, and they formed this sister city relationship, signed a charter in 1985. And Abigail just mentioned that Yamauchi, Japan, that was the original city, but it merged with other cities, surrounding cities. So now the name is Takeo City, but the sister city relationship is still going strong.
Mm-hmm. And what happens throughout the year? What sort of event? What are the actual exchanges between the sisters?
Well, our two programs are themselves a little different, depending on who's involved and what we the kind of possibilities we have open to us. In our Japanese program, we have a very long-running middle school exchange of students.
Oh, nice.
And that's actually that's an incredible program that we're now seeing sort of second generations coming through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-year exchange during which the first year our students host middle school students, mm-hmm. and then the second year our students go and travel and stay with the families of mm-hmm. the kids that they hosted the year before.
And how long a stay is it?
It's about 10 days.
Oh, 10 days.
Spring
okay.
break. It's short.
Oh, spring break. Okay.
Yes, but since the program runs for over a year, like almost 2 years, the families and the students and the whole communities, both communities, get together and they form like lifelong mm-hmm. relationships and friendships. So that's a very unique and special thing about this program.
Mm-hmm. At the event on November 5th, do we know what the menu is going to be? Because one of the things, Les Blank, the filmmaker who sadly passed away in, I believe it was April of 2013, he made a lot of cultural films, a lot of them having to do with food. And the thing that he always said about food was, no matter where people travel, that is the last cultural tradition they give up. They keep their traditional foods, and they want their traditional foods. And so I think that's always a very, and I think not just foods, but the etiquette of the table, I think, is always a very interesting way to either embarrass yourself or to really get to know another culture. So can we talk a little bit about how some of that may play out at the event?
Yes. I'd love to talk about the food. It's, in terms of it being an experience, you know, we're also, this is, we have a big turnout. A lot of people come to this. So mm-hmm. we might not be able to give quite the intimate table experience
sure.
that would be, you know, the way our exchange participants really get to experience the cultures in people's homes. But for this event, we have chosen food really carefully to represent the kinds of food traditions that we think people should really know about.
Mm-hmm.
For example, borscht is a soup that I think typically a lot of Americans don't typically encounter. And
beets. Beets
yes,
and vinegar.
Beets. And it's,
beets,
you know, it's
beef
one of
and
these
vinegar.
Things that I think people, it's almost a punchline sometimes, but it's personally a pleasure to watch people be knocked out by how delicious the borscht is.
And there's so many different variations.
Yes, there are. And we actually go for a kind of solid, middle-of-the-road meat variant, and then mm-hmm. we have a delicious vegetarian variant as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and do you use red beets?
Indeed we do.
Okay.
Yes.
I know I've seen some versions that, one really interesting one from Russia used white beets.
Ah, yes.
And then I've made some myself using golden beets.
Yeah. I'm personally a borscht lover and make it throughout the winter season. And we, of course, experiment mm-hmm. with the golden beets are nice.
Yeah, golden beets.
But for this, we really want to give people kind of the, just a solid
the real thing.
Borscht experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What other Ukrainian foods?
We also are offering, I think just about every culture seems to have some kind of dumpling, mm-hmm. right? So we are making this a 2-dumpling event this year, I'm happy to say. The Ukrainian dumpling is a lovely one called a vareniki. And we have, I believe we have cabbage and potato stuffings mm-hmm. on our menu for this go-round. And usually it's garnished with a mushroom caramelized onion kind of yummy cooked down smush that's importantly prepared in sunflower seed oil.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And then the other dumpling, I'm going to guess. Yes, the other dumpling is gyoza. It's called gyoza, the Japanese variation. And it's very, very popular.
Is it
in
like
Japan.
A Japanese pot sticker?
Yes, exactly.
I love them. I love them.
Right. You can put a lot of different things inside, yes. Pork, vegetarian seafood. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of varieties, and mm-hmm. it's so popular.
I get them whenever I go to Sushi Tozai or when I go to Gary Chu's Osake. I always start with
yes,
that.
Yes, wonderful appetizer. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So, so borscht and vareniki and Japanese side is sushi and gyoza. And mm-hmm. we both have salad and the Ukrainian salad and Japanese salad.
Mm-hmm. What would the Japanese salad be?
Well, Japanese salad, we call it sunomono. Uh-huh. Su means vinegar. Mm-hmm. So we marinate sliced cucumber. With special vinegar.
Another one of
dressing.
My favorite things. I love sunomono.
Excellent. That's great. That's a really nice addition to like soy saucy meal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just has a really nice
very
balance.
Bright
exactly.
on the palate. Yes.
Yes, yes.
And then what would a classic salad of the Ukraine be, or what is the one you're going to be serving?
We are offering a cabbage salad. There's a lot of, you know, cabbage dishes mm-hmm. In Ukrainian cuisine. And so this will just be one thing I've often reflected on is in Slavic cooking, as I've encountered it, you often have dishes that have simpler ingredient lists. Like, well, not entirely, but a salad is often just a couple of simple ingredients mm-hmm. put together. And so this is just a sort of cabbage and dill and, you know, a light dressing.
Most of my favorite salads are extremely simple. Mm-hmm. I don't think they yeah. need a whole lot of different things in them.
Yeah.
Certain special thing. I mean, potato salad's different. But, you know, a nice, refreshing green salad, it doesn't need very much. We're going to take a little musical break here and listen to some young Japanese women sing about chicken.
She went to college, studied anatomy. I thought her probably butchery. We got two babies, is it cool? One was magenta, the other was blue.
I know my chicken, you got to know you're a chicken. I know my chicken, you got to know you're a chicken. I know my chicken, you got to know you're a chicken.
That was Sibomoto. I'm not sure if they're still together or not, but I think they're very sweet. I wanted them to do an all Ramones cover album, but I don't think that's happened yet. But I think it would sound really good. We are talking about a Sister City Friendship Dinner and Celebration taking place on November 5th. My guests are Meg Mizutani and Abigail Evans. I trip over the English names. There's going, in addition to the dinner that we're having, and we're just, oh, while the song was playing, we were going on and on about the gyoza. Yes, I want some, see if Sushi Tozai is still open when I'm driving home. There's going to be entertainment as well. And I know, Meg, you teach taiko drumming.
Yes, I do. I do. I play taiko and I teach taiko, yes, in the community.
Will that be part of the evening?
Yes, we will actually have a little different way to present taiko this year. We will have dance demonstration accompanied by taiko group ensemble.
Now, what kind of dance?
Well, it's a traditional Japanese folk dance.
Oh.
It's called tankobushi, and we're going to teach, demonstrate, and also invite the audience, everybody, guests there to participate in,
oh, cool,
in the dance. So it's going to be a huge like circle around the tables, and we're going to invite everybody to dance together.
Oh, what
together.
Fun.
Yes.
What fun. And then will there be Russian entertainment as well?
Ukrainian.
Ukrainian, I'm sorry.
Oh, quite all right.
I knew that.
Yes, we actually have some vocal entertainment and some instrumental entertainment planned. So we'll have some traditional folk songs, duets that are, sort of fun and lively and entertaining. And then the national instrument of Ukraine is a stringed instrument, somewhat like a lute, called a bandura.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an ensemble of bandurists playing for us.
Uh-huh. How did the Sister City connection with the Ukrainian city unfold?
You know, that also was really that grew out of a connection that individuals in Sevastopol made.
Mm-hmm.
We had families who were involved very early on in founding our sister city relationship with our Japanese counterpart. And it just so happened that this family, the Roberts family, was had also traveled a bunch to Eastern Europe and proposed, you know, during the early 90s in particular, there was a lot of enthusiasm for sister cities. And in Eastern Europe, you know, there was all this opening up and reaching out. And so that's how they sort of sponsored Chihirin as our partner in Ukraine.
Okay. It seemed for a while, this is many years ago, when I first started hearing about sister cities, it seemed that often that relationship was formed with a city in need, a city that for some reason really needed, number one, the attention, and then whatever support its sister city could bring to it. Has that factored into either of these situations?
Yeah, I am aware that there are some sister city relationships like that. With Japan, it was more like it came from the desire to have our youth exposed to different cultures early on. And Ukrainian sister city.
Well, I would say that during that period, it was 1993 when we made the connection to our Ukrainian counterparts. And that was very much part of the desire to reach out, was a sense of wanting to give people there a possibility of seeing different ways of not Soviet being, mm-hmm. you know, making. And we're still involved in one of the things we do as part of our program is occasionally we host delegations from an open world program. That's a U.S. congressional program run to bring young professionals from developing countries mm-hmm. to the U.S. in particular to learn about things like accountable governance and mm-hmm. transparency and non-governmental civic organizations. Mm-hmm. And so we have been able to sponsor Ukrainians to come over mm-hmm. and participate in that.
Nice. Nice. In 1994, I was approached and asked if I wanted to help form a sister region with Provence. Mm. I had written a piece in what's now the Sonoma County Independent. What's now the North Bay Bohemian, but was then the Sonoma County Independent. And I'd written this big feature about the similarities between Sonoma and Provence, something that had been bubbling below the surface for quite some time. And somebody out of the blue read it, and he was a Frenchman who did a lot of business in the Var. Mm-hmm. And we ended up doing it. He translated my article into French, and we had a delegation here, and we had several parties for them, and we made a presentation to the Board of Supervisors, and they brought gifts, and then they welcomed us to their agricultural fair in Aix-en-Provence. We shipped something like wines from 14 wineries, and all of this was right when the our olive oil industry was undergoing its renaissance. Mm-hmm. So we had olive oils, we had lavender products, everything that I was able to gather that seemed to resonate between our two regions. And then we had a thriving exchange going on here for quite some time, and then for we had an umbrella organization that wasn't a sisterhood organization. Mm-hmm. And if I would have been a little more savvy, I probably would have looked into that. But our hosting nonprofit disbanded.
Oh.
And it took us a very long time to get our money back from them because we were depositing with them. And without any funds, we couldn't really operate. But it was really, you know, we learned a lot about Provence, and we learned, I think they learned some about us, and we really did learn about some of the deeper connections of two lands that have a lot of similarity in geography and are facing a lot of the same problems.
Yeah, and it's true that the selection of our sister cities involved considerations like what kind of land, what kind of culture, whether that's agricultural culture.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, our sister cities, especially, I mean, Takeo City is a bigger city now, but Yamauchi, to begin with, was a smaller, mm-hmm. Very agricultural region.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for Chihiren, very similar. People talk about that when they come here, similar landforms and mm-hmm. great fertility, and
mm-hmm.
So that is definitely something that we share
mm-hmm.
with people who come.
What, have you gone on any of the trips, either one of you?
Yes, I have chaperoned yes. students groups.
Oh, tell us about
yes,
it.
Yeah, it was such a wonderful experience. I've been there many, many times, but every time I take a group of students, it's just like a new experience.
Sure.
And the students just really, until you step outside your comfortable environment,
sure.
you just don't realize what you have, what you appreciate, like what you have every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the students really become aware of, the differences. It's not really the differences. You can still communicate, even speaking fluently, each other's languages. And they just make this incredible connection within this 10 days and mm-hmm. the families. And of course, they stay in touch over the year between hosting and travel. But the kind of connection that they make in Japan when I take the students, just amazing. And mm-hmm. over there, the whole town welcomes us.
Look, yes.
And it's just such a special, special time.
And you stay in people's homes,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
I'm wondering, what are some of the, not in a negative way, but what are some of the bigger challenges for the middle school students to understand and get used to? And I want to do that for both regions.
Yes, well, of course, the language. But
sure.
They quickly learn that the language really shouldn't be the problem. They can just communicate by, you know, gesture or, like, expressions, or mm-hmm. they write things down, and they really don't have to talk to communicate. So mm-hmm. that's what they learn. Food is another thing, but mm-hmm. luckily our students here in Sonoma County have already been exposed to so many different kind of food and culture, so they do really well. And every day, like in the morning, the students come to me and tell me, like, Meg, you know, you want to hear what I ate last night? It was wonderful. And
well, what about those Japanese breakfasts?
Exactly. They just tell me all about it, and it just makes me feel so good and really grateful to the families who host our students, because they just try really hard to make sure they're comfortable and, you know, the students are eat well and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's just it's a really important experience for them to experience something different, but at the same mm-hmm. time learn, like, wow, you know, the human, like, it's
we're
universal
all humans, yeah.
Friendship is universal.
Yes.
And, yep. Yep.
And in the Ukraine?
Well, I guess I do have to address the fact that it's a bit of a different situation, as we did have to suspend we had a high school exchange program for many years, and we've temporarily had to suspend that as Ukraine is at war.
Right.
Things have been, I think, settling over the long term, but we... You know, we had to just, at a certain point, we didn't feel that it was a safe thing for
mm-hmm. sure.
Our sending students. We've continued to host some delegations. Mm-hmm. And I can speak a little bit about, it's interesting because I know I've participated on the hosting end with both programs. And I think that, you know, there's slightly different miscommunications that come up, but it's what everyone experiences is just that connection that Meg mentioned, mm-hmm. and this incredible sense of being touched by how deeply people welcome you,
mm-hmm.
whether that's here or there.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with the program?
I got involved originally because my son participated in the middle school exchange.
Oh, but now you went to France when you were quite young, right?
I did. I was. I had a lively interest in international travel,
mm-hmm.
so I went to France on the early side through actually a personal friendship with a French girl that
oh, nice.
She and I made, and you know, I saved up, and her family hosted me.
Mm-hmm. And then your son went to.
He's been to Takeo twice, actually.
Oh, wow, great.
So and I think that this is not unknown in this program. He, uh-huh. you know, we formed a deeply connected sort of a love affair with his Japanese counterpart. Like, he became my Japanese son, and I guess my son felt similarly there.
How great.
Yeah, and 2 years later, he went back just on a personal basis
uh-huh.
and stayed with that family again. And I still hope that Mao comes back and visits us.
Uh-huh. And how old's your son now?
He's 19.
And where is he?
He's at the JC.
Oh, great. Yeah. And great. Did he go to Annalee?
He did.
Cool.
Yes.
Okay. And how did you get involved in the program?
First, I was asked by my friend in Sebastopol, whose mm-hmm. son participated in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm from Japan and I speak Japanese, mm-hmm. She asked me to translate a letter that she wanted to send to her son's host family in Japan, because she wanted to thank them for the great gifts that they received. So I translated, and then I heard all the great stories, and I thought, like, wow, this is such an amazing program. And I'm personally committed to just creating this bridge between the U.S. and Japan,
mm-hmm.
Grassroots diplomacy, and mm-hmm. that's it's all about. You know, Sebastopol World Friends' motto is world peace, one friend at a time. And this really, I really, you know, just fell in love with that mm-hmm. Motto and the organization.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
So I got involved, and both of my kids participated, and uh-huh. I've been back and forth, and I'm making friends in, you know, over there. It's my second hometown in Japan. So
how nice.
I feel so lucky. And I feel so lucky to have this community of Sebastopol who support supports this program, because it's not just an individual's experiences, but it's the whole community that work toward global peace. And mm-hmm. when you have this event, you know, Friendship Dinner, you really see it, like people mm-hmm. come together. Mm-hmm. It's like a reunion
sure.
of everybody and all the new supporters of our program, and representatives from consulates, you know, visit, and mm-hmm. it's such a special, unique mm-hmm. Program.
Will there be any visitors from either the Ukraine or Japan at the event on November 5th?
Well, I'm very proud to say that we intend to host a consul delegates from both the Japanese and Ukrainian consulates.
Oh, excellent.
In San Francisco. The consul general of Ukraine and an attaché plan to come. And Meg, who will be?
Yes, Satoshi from Satoshi Higo from Japanese consulate, mm-hmm. Vice consul in charge of sister city relationships.
Oh, excellent.
He is coming to you know, attend the meeting. So we're very proud.
So there's another great reason to attend.
Yes,
another great reason for
right.
me to like take lots of vitamins, so I have the stamina to do both things. Let's take another musical break, hear a little bit more. And while we were talking, Mary researched, and yes, Sibomato disbanded in 2002, but they reformed in 2011. They were touring last year, and they have a new album. Well, they had a new album out in 2014. So now we're going to hear a little bit more.
Thank you.
Sibamoto, very moody music. That's a very moody track. They're a fun band, really fun band. Sister City Friendship Dinner and Celebration, November 5th, at Manji Temple in Sebastopol. It's going to include a silent auction, and the silent auction is going to benefit Project Cure. You want to tell us about that?
I'll speak a little bit about Project Cure. This is a partnership that we've made with this organization, Project Cure. They're an international group. They collect medical donations on a kind of massive scale, and then they work with groups to send cargo container shipments to places in need of medical assistance, really at cost, only for the only for the cost of shipping, because everything pretty much is donated. And we're not talking just about, you know, Band-Aids. We're talking about often relatively state-of-the-art equipment and supplies and all kinds of things. And another thing that I just want to mention that makes them exceptional is that they travel to the sites that have been designated for help, and they do these detailed assessments where they meet with the doctors and the staff of a clinic and find out from them what their situation is like and what they really need.
And so, and do they are they involved in the distribution of what they send as well?
Yeah, so they sort of do this needs assessment, and then they come back and they handpick exactly everything that can possibly fit into a cargo container for that community. And so we formed a partnership with Project Cure for the medical clinic in Chihiran. It's the only hospital or clinic for a large region, and unfortunately it really has deeply dilapidated equipment or lack of equipment, and so it's really a community in need.
Well, that's just such a great thing to be doing, and to be following up both, or not following up, to be starting out with assessment and following up with distribution.
Yeah, and they send people with the shipment to train staff.
Oh, to train as well.
I mean, because none of this is really any good if then you get there and no one knows how to run the machine, or they lack the proper cord, you know, because a lot of times electrical systems vary. And so they actually, you know, very intelligently follow through with all of that.
Yeah, one of the things that, I mean, because we hear so much donate and do this, and for me anyway, it's like, oh, that's happening there. That's great. But it wasn't until I started reading some about the Clinton Foundation. It's an election year. I wanted to know more about what they actually do. And what I didn't know is often if you send, especially medications, you send medication to a really at-risk country where things, are, you know, it's a failed country perhaps. A lot of the drugs don't get to the people. They end up on the black market, often in Europe. And so one of the things that the Clinton Foundation was doing was on the ground, making sure that the malaria drugs and HIV drugs, and I think there was malaria, HIV, and a couple other things that were actually going to people and not being taken.
Yeah. Project Cure's focus is not so much on medications as supplies
but the other
and
thing,
equipment.
Sure. I mean, everything is needed. You know, everything is needed. And just that one thing was sort of a little blind spot for me was the actual distributing the medical supplies or whatever until it actually got, once it got on the ground.
And it makes a big difference. Not all organizations are the same in terms of, you know, percentage of overhead costs and what they're able to actually accomplish.
Right. Yeah.
And Project Cure is a pretty remarkable one.
Great. What are some of the things that will be in the silent auction?
We are going to get some local stores and restaurants gift certificates and a lot of, I think, like, collections from, like, Japanese art and, you know, things like that. So we're very, the Ukrainian art.
We always have a nice selection of restaurant gift certificates. And, you know, I'm, I guess we don't have our silent auction expert here with us this evening, so we're a little bit...
It'll be one of the surprises. Yes. Silent auctions are really fun, but you have to be careful.
Yes.
If you get into a bidding war, get into a bidding war later rather than earlier.
we're trying
to make
that
the
sure
hallway,
we have some bidding
hard
wars.
Way. I love bidding wars. I get very competitive. They're really a great deal of fun. Okay, we've got a few. We've got about 10 minutes more now. So, what if somebody listening would be inspired to get involved? How might they be able to get involved with you?
Well, we would be delighted. You know, we're completely volunteer run, and there are a lot of people who get involved with us who just do different kinds of things. I mean, some people have a lot of enthusiasm, and they come to our meetings and wind up joining our board. And some people just like to come and help at events and maybe roll sushi with us, mm-hmm. or cut flowers. And some people, of course, want to find out more and learn about our programs and host visitors.
Oh, nice.
From, uh-huh. You know, we have a variety of people who come and stay with us throughout the year. We're looking toward perhaps a new program where we partner with Sonoma State University and Kagoshima University, mm-hmm. and have some college students come.
Oh, nice.
We're looking for a possibility of hosting some college students,
uh-huh.
who are really fun, having hosted one before, I can say that. So if you check out our website at www.sebastopolwf.org.
Sebastopol, spelled out.
Yes.
WF.org.
Yeah, and you can learn about different kinds of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I will put this up on my website on the events page, and I will include a link to that page as
Sounds
well.
Great.
That's wonderful. We just want to tell people that even if you don't travel to foreign, you know, countries overseas, you can still contribute to global peace staying at home.
Oh,
just
absolutely.
Learn about the different cultures or programs like ours, mm-hmm. and contribute in any way that they can. It's just part of the global
and
peace effort.
There are so many little things, little tiny things that vary from culture to culture, that if you pay attention, you learn. And if you don't pay attention, and sadly, I think a lot of Americans who have traveled, they get their feelings hurt, and they get defensive quickly, and they don't necessarily pay attention. And when we had Sonoma Provence Exchange, we had these two wonderful young women who were interning at a winery. And so we had a sort of a workshop or presentation and then a really wonderful Provençal lunch. But the title of it was Never Show a French Person Your Bedroom. And what it was about, and this has always puzzled me, when you go to someone's house nude that you don't know in America, they'll often show you every room in the house. And
that's always seemed odd to me.
It's always seemed odd to me. And so the girls started to give it that sexy title. They started out with that as an example. And they said, French people don't understand that house tour. And it's like, don't worry, neither do Americans. In France, they only show you the rooms that you have independent access to.
Oh, yes.
And the reason for that is they feel that they should need excellent, they should be excellent hosts. So if at 2:00 in the morning you get up and you're looking for a glass of milk because you do that at home, they think they should have anticipated that and provided it with you. So they're not going to necessarily show you their kitchen. They're going to show you your bedroom. They're going to show you the WC, double WC, the living, you know, the rooms that you have access to. But then they talked about a lot of other things. And I don't know about you, but if you've heard, but for a long time, and I'm not sure if this is still the case, American women, particularly in France, have a reputation of being loose. And I think it may be true in Italy and Spain as well. Well, one of the things that the girls also talked about was how different cultures define space. And that in France, strangers define space out in public by making eye contact and not smiling.
Mm.
Americans define space by making eye contact and smiling. And so, but in France, smiling at a stranger is very prescribed. In collusion, you can smile at a stranger in collusion. So let's say somebody, I'm a passenger in a car, and the person who's driving is driving like an idiot, and maybe they cut somebody off. And that the passenger in that car, we can look at each other and smile because we're in collusion, just like two people are running for a parking meter before the gendarme gets there to give you a ticket. But otherwise, if you smile at a stranger with no other context, you're either a little crazy or you're coming on to them. Which
or you're American.
Well, yes. And so which, that's where the American reputation has come from, that simple smiling. And people, especially in Paris, Americans think Parisians are rude. And one of the reasons is you are never supposed to look at a map in public in Paris.
Right, it's
or in France.
Thing.
You're insulting them. French people feel an obligation to tell you, to help you with your directions. The problem is, they don't have an obligation to be right. They just have an obligation to help. And so what they said was, ask somebody, go for a block. If it doesn't work, ask somebody else, and you will get there. If you have to look at a map, go somewhere where you can do it in private, because otherwise you're insulting people. And when I was in Malaysia, I learned a couple of things. They had I was hosted by the government, and I was by myself, but then with the entourage. And they were doing a special dinner for me. A special luncheon for me, which was actually remarkable because I had met a young man who was attending Sonoma State University who was from Fiji. He was the son of the former king of Fiji. And at this luncheon in Kuala Lumpur, they brought the chef out and we started talking. And he mentioned his wife was from Fiji. Turns out she was the cousin of this young man that I had met here in Sonoma State. So talk about small world. But in Malaysia, if... They have to ask you if you want seconds and thirds. You have to decline three times. And for me, declining a second time is, you know, if they ask a third, it's like I'm going to insult them if I don't eat it. I was so full. I thought I was going to die. I ate so much at that luncheon. When I think of it, I'm still full. So there are just all those little kinds of things. And something I was told, and I'm not sure if this is true, but I was reading about it, this was a while ago, that when Japanese people are watching a performance, they don't necessarily smile when they clap. That they clap, but not smile. And there was a performance, and the Japanese people, primarily Japanese audience, they clapped, and I thought, oh, they liked us. Mm-hmm. And later someone was saying this, they were so cold, they didn't smile at all. You know, they must have hated us.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you pointed out, because in Japan, certain people believe that, like, when you take things seriously, you should not smile, whether you like it or support it. Mm-hmm. So that might be, you know, that might be it. But I just tell you very quickly that all the people who come from our sister city in Japan, they come here, and they're so touched by American people's hospitality. And they say, like, they're so, you know, like, they smile, and they welcome us. They're so kind, and they're open, you know, like, showing the house, the tour. So they really like it and appreciate it.
Uh-huh, that's great. But I think just understanding those little things, if I hadn't read that about a Japanese audience, I would have wondered, oh gosh, were we horrible dancers? But it's like, oh no, okay, I understand what's going on. And I love discovering those little things. That's one of my favorite things about travel. That's why I don't like to be a tourist. I like to travel. And I like to get as close to the culture as I can when I travel.
Can I ask, do they show you the bedrooms?
They are told to show the house to the guests because they want to make them feel comfortable.
Okay, but so, if you're not American, do they show you the bedroom?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to pin that down.
Yes. I always feel so awkward if somebody showed me the house and this is our bedroom. Why do I know that? Why do I need to know this?
I think that
it's like,
Ukrainian
good, you
culture,
made your bed.
I think that they actually are a showing culture, but I can't yet speak from experience. However, I'm delighted to say that we are working on putting an adult delegation to Ukraine together for this April.
Oh, cool.
So I can report back later.
Okay.
Whether
that will be a very interesting trip. I've never been to the Ukraine, and the only time I was in Japan was in the Tokyo airport. It was amazing to fly in and see Mount Fujiyama. That was just, I had to keep slapping myself because it's like, it's not a painting. It's real. It's real.
Postcard, yes.
It was amazing. Right. But it was on the way to Malaysia. We stopped there. But I would love to visit Japan sometime. And on that note, we are just about out of time. I want to remind you about a couple of things coming up next Saturday, October 29th, the fabulous Fall Feast, a fundraiser for Farm Trails. It's going to be a fabulous event. Farmtrails.org is where you can get the information. Coming up November 5th and 6th is the Sonoma Extra Virgin Festival. And then I will be talking about this next week, but we've got the first annual West Sonoma Book Fair coming up on Thursday, November 10th from 6 to 9 with a polenta bar. It's a reason to get out of bed after the election. And thanks very much to my two guests.
Thank you.
Meg Mitsutani and Abigail Evans. The event is November 5th, a Saturday at Edmonji Temple. And you just need to go to SebastopolWF.org or come to MichelleAnnaJordan.com and go to the events page. I'll have it up there by tomorrow afternoon. Have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And meet me back here on KRCB for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in its 21st year.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up old family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong.